This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The 67,000 private sector jobs the economy added last month is just about 0.04% of the American workforce. At this point, we're going to take what we can get. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Progressive Insurance, with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information available at progressive.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. TGIF, everybody. It's the 3rd of September today, and it is good to have you here. All right, so I guess the official verdict on today's jobs report could best be summarized as medium good. Overall, the economy dumped 54,000 jobs in August. You take out the temporary census workers going away, though, and the headline is that we got just about 70,000 new private sector jobs last month. The unemployment rate, on the other hand, which does come from a different survey, actually went up. 9.6% is that number. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is here to talk about the news of the day. Hey, Mitchell.
Hi, Kai.
Let me ask you the nuts and bolts question first. We are adding private sector jobs, have been for a number of months now, and yet the unemployment rate is going up. Make sense of that for me.
Well, it's because people are coming back into the workforce to look for work again. They were sort of off the radar. Now they're back on. Just in August, another 500,000. You know, people are running out of their unemployment benefits. There are these glimmers of hope in the job market. Unemployment will probably stay in this 9.5% to 10% range, I don't know, through November, probably well into next year.
November, of course, is the date, the only date, really, that people in Washington care about. The elections are coming up. Is it going to be voting time this fall? It's the economy, stupid.
You know, maybe even more specifically, it's the jobs, stupid. We're starting to realize just how deeply and broadly this great recession has bitten into the way we live. Births in America were down 2.5%, marriages down 3.5%. Something called new household formation. Basically, it has flattened out. Usually, we're adding like a million households a year just from kids growing up and moving out, you know, people getting married. All of this really suggests that people are just putting their lives on hold. They're deciding not to start families, not to leave home after high school or college. Demographers tell me that a lot of this is really just about lack of jobs, lack of job opportunity.
All right, but wait a minute. And I need to preface this by saying that unemployment is horrible. 10% unemployment is a very high number. But I want to get at why this feeling of unease is so widespread, because 90% of the American workforce has a job. Why is it so widespread then?
Well, the folks at the Pew Research Center have been doing a lot of surveys on this. They looked at why this relatively small unemployed sliver makes the rest of us feel so worried. And actually, they found out it's not such a sliver. Researcher Richard Morin.
About a quarter of all currently working adults had been unemployed at some point during the recession. Add to that 9-10% who are currently unemployed, and you have a third of the country who has dealt directly with what the worst of the recession has had to offer.
And then you add the fact that the people who are still working, many of them haven't had raises. A lot of people who are working part-time because they can't get full-time hours or they can only find a temp job. And then finally, there's what I call the I know someone effect. We all know people right. who are unemployed. All of that makes the rest of us decide not to spend, not to go on holiday.
Even though we've been adding jobs all summer, if you add it up since the beginning of the year, it averages out to like 95,000 a month. Even given all that, We're still not feeling it. We're still not feeling the love.
Well, consumers are starting to feel a little more upbeat. Obviously, that's why people have started to look for work again. But I'm going to be a bummer here again. The Pew folks did another study recently, just out this week. They looked at people who had gone back to work after being laid off. And on average, they're making less money. They feel very overqualified for the jobs that they've gotten. They're not as satisfied with their job or their career prospects. That could change eventually, but it'll probably take a while.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman out of Oregon Public Broadcasting and our entrepreneurship desk up there. Mitchell, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
President Obama being the president and all, he probably got an early peek at this morning's unemployment number. So he was ready. He said this morning in some remarks in the Rose Garden, he's going to have a new jobs plan ready for everybody by next week. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale has more now on what's being talked about and whether it might do any good.
One idea the White House is reportedly considering is a temporary elimination of the payroll tax on employers. Economist Tim Quinlan with Wells Fargo says that'll help because companies are flush with cash and a payroll tax cut will encourage them to hire workers.
But until now, businesses have not really taken that step to add to payrolls, really just because there's a lot of uncertainty about what the costs of adding an additional employee are going to be. So I think the president providing a little bit of clarification here can only be seen as a positive thing by markets.
But tax breaks risk increasing the deficit, which is why Robert Bixby of the Concord Coalition says they need to be temporary.
The problem is that once you lower a tax like that, it becomes very difficult to raise it again. And so if you keep lowering taxes, the expectation is that they're going to stay there. You might have a very serious deficit effect over time.
But will temporary stimulus do the trick? Stephen Moore, editorial writer for the Wall Street Journal, likens a short-term tax cut to the home buyer's tax credit, or cash for clunkers.
The problem we run into with all of these temporary assistance programs is that when the aid runs out or when the tax cut runs out, the people lose their jobs again.
White House advisors are also considering permanently extending a tax credit for money invested in research and development, although some economists say that'll take a long time to have an impact. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, a nice tidy send-off into a three-day weekend. We will have the details when we do the numbers. The already rising price of wheat jumped even higher on commodities markets in Chicago today. Happened after Russia extended its ban on wheat exports through late next year because of the fires and the drought they've been having over there. From the United Nations today came word of a special meeting on global food prices that's set for later this month. Just this week, a big spike in those prices has helped trigger deadly riots over in Mozambique in East Africa. Brings to mind the big run-up in food prices a couple of years ago, also followed by widespread food riots. This time around, though, officials are insisting things are going to be different. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Russia is normally the world's third biggest supplier, but its wheat crop has been decimated by drought and wildfires, and global wheat prices have surged by more than half this summer. Still, at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization in Rome, Secretary Abdelreza Abbasian isn't overly concerned by Russia's move to extend its export ban.
I don't think this decision by itself will lead us to any crisis. It does lead us to more uncertainty, and it does make the market very anxious.
Although prices are up by more than half since June, that's far from the doubling of prices seen 2 years ago. And Abbasian says global shortages are unlikely given a comfortable buffer stockpiled from record harvests the past 2 years.
U.S. will be exporting far more wheat this year than the last year. But even the drawdown on the stocks would still keep the stock level in the U.S. at near 20-year high.
Market speculators are betting the rising wheat prices will boost demand for less expensive grains, and that's also nudged prices higher for corn and rice. At Washington's Center for Strategic and International Studies, global food expert Johanna Nesith-Tuttle says it's still nothing like the pressures created by the surge in oil prices 2 years ago.
As gas prices rose very rapidly, corn prices also rose, and then you saw much more competition between food for fuel, and I don't think that that's happening at this point.
Some experts say the higher prices could actually have a beneficial effect by prompting farmers to plant even more grain, and that could lead to a bumper crop next year. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Just in time for college kids getting back to school, New York State Attorney General Andrew Cuomo has announced an investigation into deceptive credit card marketing that's targeted at college students. Cuomo wants every college and university in New York to share any exclusive marketing contracts they have with card companies. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Maryland, Amy Scott reports.
Jessica Becker is a senior at the University of Minnesota. She owes almost $20,000 in student loans and more than $4,000 in credit card debt. That's about average for college seniors these days.
I put my books for the semester on my credit card. I put a replacement laptop to fix my old laptop.
New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo is looking at the marketing deals many colleges have with credit card companies. The card issuers get student contact information and the right to use the school logo. The college often gets a cut of the charges on the card. Ben Woolsey is head of consumer research at creditcards.com. He says college students tend to be loyal customers.
If they get the card while they're in college and it's one of their first cards, they'll tend to keep it much longer. It's a much more profitable long-term relationship for the card issuer.
Especially if that student racks up a lot of late fees and finance charges. Under recent reforms, card companies can no longer entice students to fill out applications with free pizza and T-shirts. Anyone under age 21 needs proof of income or an adult to co-sign. Consumer advocate Ed Merzwinski with U.S. Public Interest Research Group says those steps go a long way toward protecting young people.
But Cuomo should absolutely continue to push farther. He should make sure credit card companies are complying with the federal law.
One big card issuer, Bank of America, says it stopped marketing on campus before the law took effect. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
This was one of those rare late summer weeks where you really didn't know what was going to happen economically. There is actual news to talk about. The Fed and the jobs report, to name just a couple of them. Perfect fodder for a little number we like to call our weekly wrap of Wall Street and beyond. Here to do that with us from our studios in New York, Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine. Also, Felix Salmon from Reuters. Good to talk to you both again.
Good to be here, Kai.
Great to be here, Kai.
So we were visited this week by the ghost of September 2008 past, the Financial Inquiry Commission, Dick Fuld, former CEO of Lehman Brothers, Ben Bernanke, the chairman, as we know, of the Federal Reserve, Felix. Here's my question. This commission, whose job it is to figure out what happened, why, and make sure it never happened again, what are they doing? I mean, financial reforms passed. We know what happened. Why are they wasting our time?
It's a good question. They didn't give Dick Fuld much of a hard time, but I kind of got the impression that no one was paying a lot of attention to what he was saying or had any particular interest in engaging with him. That at this point, we're late enough in the year. The entire report is due by the end of the year. This thing is being written already. I don't think that these particular hearings are going to be that important.
Lee, this the story that John Dimsdale did for us at the top of the show about the Obama administration talking about more stimulus and tax cuts and businesses and all of this stuff, is that going to come in time to do any good in this economy, or is it just going to sort of work its way through?
You know, the jobs number this week was not as bad as it could have been. It's a recovery. You know, it's slow. It's painful. You can hardly recognize it at times, but it is, in fact, a recovery. So I do think we need more help, but I think these fears of a double dip are a little bit overblown.
All right. So I'm just going to take issue with that just because I can. There are 8 million people who lost their jobs in this recession who would say, dude, recovery?
Absolutely. And I'm not saying the job situation isn't dire. It's horrible. And I think we need more help for the unemployed. I think the unemployment rate is probably going to go up before it goes down. I mean, that's a crisis, and that's a huge crisis. But, you know, double dip is something really severe, and I don't think we're there yet.
Oh, that's much better. We're not there yet. I feel much better now. I say that every time I talk to you. I feel much better now. Felix, let me give you the last word on this. The jobs report this morning, not so bad, not so good, kind of bumping along the muddy bottom.
I thought it was pretty bad, insofar as it seems to show no visible recovery at all. It's flat. Nothing is happening. The employment situation is not improving. And ultimately, if the unemployment gets worse, if the number of people with jobs fails to rise, even in the private sector, which was supposedly the bright spot of this employment report, the rise in employment in the private sector failed to keep pace just with the rise of the population. So I don't see a recovery there. I think that the market was very doom and gloom and worried about a double dip, and now it's just seeing a flat as a pancake, nothing happening for the foreseeable future. And that, you know, flat is the new up. Suddenly they were excited about that.
Well, but Lee, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it is going to be a really long time before we're adding jobs at the pace to keep up with the population,
right,
let alone to even make a dent in the unemployment rate. It's going to be a long time. We have to be adding, I mean, 200,000 jobs a month, and then you start to talk about making a dent in the unemployment rate. But
yep.
I think that the important thing about this number this week was that it, you know, last month, the July numbers were terrible. I mean, not only were they were below what was anticipated, but you saw a decline in temp hours and temp employment, which is, you know, that had been on the rise for several months prior. So with this number this week, that was reversed, and everything came out slightly better than was anticipated. So I'm just saying it might be the beginning of more of an upward trend.
The problem is, of course, Kai, that if it takes a really long time for this job recovery to come along,
right,
then at that point, people will have been out of work for a year and a half, 2 years. And at that point, they're unemployable. They're long-term unemployed, and there's just really very little opportunities for the long-term unemployed to get jobs. And that's what we're worried about, is that we've got a temporary recession. The recession comes and then it ends and then you get a recovery. But the joblessness that comes with the recession becomes permanent.
Felix Salmon at Reuters, Lee Gallagher at Fortune Magazine. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you.
Coming up, the business of high-tech fashion.
They have lights embedded into the fabric in a way that you don't even notice that there's technology there. So if you wear it, it feels like a normal shirt.
Come on, you know you want one, right? But first, let's do the numbers. Well, what better way to start a three-day weekend, huh? The Dow Industrials charged up 127 points. That's 1.25%, closed at 10,447, the blue chips did. The NASDAQ packed on 33 points, 1.5%, finished at 2233. The S&P 500 picked up 14 points, about 1.3%, ended the day at 1104. For the week, and it was a good one, the Dow jumped 2.9%, the NASDAQ chipped up 3.7%, the S&P 500 climbed 3.8%. That good news on the labor front made everybody's work easier. Goldman Sachs shined up more than 5% today. J.P. Morgan Chase put on 2.75%. Bank of America banked 1.75%. Tech stocks were in top form today. Apple shares grew 2.75%. Google pocketed 1.5%. Microsoft took home just under 1.5% today. European exchanges were up across the board. Britain's FTSE put on 1%. The French CAC 40 drove up 1.1%. You didn't know I spoke French, did you? Germany's DAX traded up 0.8%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by T. Rowe Price, understanding the connections of a complex global economy. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence at TRoePrice.com. Your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
On the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. It's a holiday. U.S. financial markets are closed, so obsessing over your portfolio will have to wait until Tuesday. President Obama marks Labor Day at Labor Fest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He'll give a speech on the economy. And according to AAA, about 34 million Americans are expected to squeeze in one more getaway before summer officially ends. To participate, you will need to travel at least 50 miles from home. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. You remember the blowout preventer on the BP well, the one that failed and brought us a summer's worth of oil flowing into the Gulf of Mexico? BP 86'd it today, took it right off the well. It's going to take a day or two to get it up to the surface. The company announced it has spent $8 billion so far cleaning up the Gulf today, and it learned a couple of lessons in the process from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro reports.
Before the BP spill, the technology to drill deeper far outpaced the technology to clean up a spill a mile or more down. Engineer Nancy Kinner says there's a reason for that.
We don't put money into things until they're broken.
Kinner is co-director of the Coastal Response Research Center at the University of New Hampshire. She says such a deep oil well blowout forced BP to innovate. A few developments? It created an oil well cap system that won't freeze in deep waters. It injected oil dispersant onto the seabed, not just on the surface. And it learned to simultaneously operate lots of remote-controlled machines on the sea floor. But Kinner says solutions created on the fly are just a start.
What you really need to do is to develop a system that really is what you would build from the ground up, not just what you would build during the fire, so to speak.
The BP report doesn't offer suggestions to make deep water drilling safer or to prevent another spill. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Having a smartphone can make your life a little bit easier. Internet access, email, music and videos right there in your pocket. Not to mention being able to make a phone call when you want to. Dealing with that monthly bill can sting, though. And for a lot of people, the two-year contract that most companies make them sign is just too much of a commitment. So enter the prepaid smartphone. And as of today, enter Verizon. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
It seems like such a great deal. A shiny new smartphone that can direct you to the grocery store, stream movies, track the orbit of Neptune. It's worth $600, and you get it for $200.
Now listen, darling. I don't want to pressure you, but why don't we take a teensy little look at the contract?
That contract ties you to your service provider for 2 years, so that great deal on the phone is really a great deal for the telecom company, says Phil Nickinson, editor of AndroidCentral.com.
You're signing away 2 years of your life and then, you know, end up paying like $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 for the contract over the life of that phone.
Verizon will now offer $30 monthly contracts for many smartphone models. Roughly 60 million people already use prepaid cell phones. And Nickinson says Verizon's move will open up a new market for smartphones.
There are a lot of people out there who just flat don't have the credit to qualify for a full smartphone plan. So this is a great way to get somebody into the ecosystem.
Commitment phobes will have to pay full price for the phones. But industry consultant Scott Cleland says many consumers will be willing to pay it.
Prepaid has the appeal of knowing exactly what you're going to spend and not being able to go over. For a growing segment of Americans, it makes a lot of sense.
And those Americans aren't satisfied with the old no-contract phones, which tend to be pretty bare bones. Cleland predicts other carriers will follow Verizon's lead, but he thinks most of us will still opt for the upfront deal of the contract. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Technology's where it's at, right? It's this gizmo or that gadget, an app for almost anything you can imagine. Wireless internet almost anywhere you go. Clothes, too. And that is not as nutty as it sounds. There are new fabrics out there that can light up your T-shirt or brighten up a ball gown or power up your smartphone. Janet Babin reports now from North Carolina Public Radio.
High-tech fashion hit the red carpet this spring at one of the industry's biggest events, the Met Ball. Pop sensation Katy Perry wore a silk gown covered in thousands of tiny LED lights that changed colors. You know Perry. Her song California Girls features the rapper Snoop Dogg.
Katy, my lady. Yeah. Look at here, baby. Uh-huh. I'm all up on you because you represent California.
That night, the paparazzi complimented Perry on her gown.
Thank you. This is a company called Cute Circuit. They're from France.
Well, actually, Katy, the company's based in the UK. Francesca Rosella and Ryan Gens of Cute Circuit designed her dress.
The whole thing ran with only three small batteries about the size of what you'd have in an iPod or in a phone.
Like 1 inch by 1 inch.
Rosella has long dreamed of melding fashion and technology. She first floated the idea of an LED dress as a young designer at Italian fashion house Valentino. They were not impressed. She also tried to incorporate technology into fashion as a purse designer at Esprit.
Why don't we put the GPS into a purse? And then, like, if you forget your purse somewhere or if someone steals it, you can just give it a call and the purse is going to tell you where it is. And they also thought I was completely insane.
So Rosella started Cute Circuit. She's working on Bluetooth-enabled jackets and clothes that can power your iPod. The company just began selling what it calls twirkle T-shirts on its website. The tops light up and change color as the wearer moves, just like Perry's dress did. Cute Circuit co-owner Ryan Gans explains.
They have lights embedded into the fabric in a way that you don't even notice that there's technology there. So if you wear it, it feels like a normal shirt. There's no, for example, wires.
The shirts sell for around $125. Gens imagines club kids will buy the washable shirts to wear on the dance floor, but they may be slow to catch on. For an industry seemingly obsessed with the new, designers and buyers often cling to uniformity. Jenna Sowers blogs about fashion for Jezebel.com.
Fashion is an incredibly old-fashioned industry in a lot of ways. It's fundamentally quite low-tech.
Sowers says sewing machine technology has been the same for decades. Designers still pull their collections together 6 months in advance, and fabrics haven't changed much either, until recently. MIT material science professor Yoel Fink creates new fabrics in his lab.
The latest fibers are fibers that emit sound, that detect sound.
Fink's new fibers could also emit smells. Imagine perfume built into a dress. Fink says the idea has attracted the attention of recession-weary clothing designers who aren't usually interested in his work.
A very large French fashion company just visited our labs a couple of weeks ago. Turns out that the materials themselves are very beautiful.
Beauty aside, Jenna Sowers with Jezebel thinks there's still only a limited market for such products.
Take Katy Perry's dress, her big, poofy, light-up dress. I don't think I've seen any other starlets wearing light-up dresses since then. It hasn't exactly set a trend.
Then again, it took time for other fashion trends, the corset, the bikini, to catch on too. Maybe smart fashion just needs more time. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, helping to solve tomorrow's retirement savings challenge. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, we're going to do burgers in honor of the news about Burger King this week that has been sold for $4 billion to a private equity group. Consumer Reports is out with its annual ranking of fast food. Burger King, despite the price, was second to last out of 30 in burgers. McDonald's came in last for burgers, first for fries, though. Topping the list overall was our own West Coast chain In-N-Out. My sympathies to those who've never had an In-N-Out burger. Double-double, animal style for me, in case you're curious. Although, I don't think their fries are very good, but I guess that's neither here nor there. Anyway, on a Friday afternoon, that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow up 127 points, 1.2%. The NASDAQ packed on 33 points, about 1.5%. The S&P 500 picked up 14 points. That is 1.33%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste West, and the executive producer of the program is a guy named J.J. Yule. Coming up this weekend on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, the loan modification waiting game.
They kept saying, oh, it's in the mail, it's in the mail. I grew up poor. I used to hear my mother say it's in the mail.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Do have yourself a great weekend. We will see you back here on Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too.
Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.